I'm setting it up for Nick this in the morning, Saturday, the 30th of January, 1971. I'm setting it up for Nick this Saturday, the 30th of January, 1971. Channel 2 over. Channel 2 over, and I'm setting it up for Nick in the morning, Saturday, the 30th of January, 1971. I'm setting up for Nick. Channel 2 over. Channel 2 over. This will be the third time he's done it. First time, I didn't get it down. Something slipped. The next time, I don't know what, everything happened. He talked with his telephone voice, and I don't think the volume was very high. So this time, he's on his way back now from the semester break. On the way back in the morning, Saturday, the 30th of January, I said one channel, two.
No, she just got commitment that I don't have. Is that where you get?
What happened to the light bulb? Well,
yeah, the man started to sell me some of those, one at the hardware store,
$1.69.
$1.69? Yes.
Oh, no. I'll bring you back one of them dollar kinds from school. They're the best anyway.
Yeah. When they start, they don't do well.
No, I know. Well, there's two kinds, you know. Well, there are at school anyway. You have the kind that, you know, you can focus, and the kind that go out wide.
Yeah.
They get what oh, man. That takes one of those big ones?
Yeah. And it's, you know, a sort of padded, you know, with that plastic.
Is that one of those floater kind that
you
drop it in the water?
Yeah. Yeah, except it's not anything. But you know, they don't have to be anything extra. That's just a piece of plastic.
That's
I don't know
right.
why you'd have to pay six prices for a little piece of plastic, do you?
No.
That costs less than a flashlight.
Does it really?
Yeah. Well, it costs $1.50 for the battery.
Yeah.
And the rest of it.
I like this little rubber thing right
here. And if that don't do better than a flashlight, Nick, I tried to remember some of those things that we were saying about your Shivanova. Is that what you'd say?
Yeah.
Nova Shiva, Shivanova?
Yeah.
And I couldn't remember. But one thing, it's the motor is made so you can get to it.
Made very simply.
Yeah.
It's got the straight six, and it's all open. It's placed in the middle, and there's no doodads all over it. You can get to it. It's easy to work on.
You can take the plugs out.
Take plugs are right in front of you. They're not down, under, around, under things and all.
Yeah.
The wire's running all over. No extras on it, so it's just simple.
And you can check your plugs when the motor's hot.
That's right. That's right, because they're so easy to get to that you don't have to burn yourself getting to them. You know, they're not next to that old hot manifold.
Oh, yeah.
They're just right in the open, right on top.
Well, one morning I pulled in up there at Cookies and asked him to check a plug for me. And he clouded up. He didn't say a word, you know. And I went out there and did it with him. And I leaned over there to take one out and just burnt me.
That's right. Most of the eights on V8s have the manifold coming right out beside the spark plugs, so that you get burned. The spark plug's on one side, the manifold's on the other side, not even near.
How about that?
Not even close. All the way on the other side. And so is the distributor. So you check the points the same way.
Yeah.
They're not next to anything.
Yeah.
So you have to adjust the points when you put them in, when the car is going. You have to adjust them when it's going so you can get the timing right.
Yeah.
And it's not next to anything either. You don't have to reach down around anything, just right there. You just do it.
And you've got that little kit, right? You can
yeah,
do your own.
I bought one of those little kits. Got a timing light. Got a pressure compression gauge.
Yeah.
All you do is pull out a spark plug and stick it in there where the spark plug was. It tells you if you got bad compression or not.
Yeah. And what do you do about it if you have?
If you do, then it depends on how bad it is. The little gauge tells you everything. Wherever the needle goes, it'll tell you whether you've got bad rings, bad valves, or bad gaskets. It has to be one or the other. The little gauge tells you which one it is, even.
Oh.
So you know what it is, and you take it down, and you just tell them, and they don't have to do all that, too.
Yeah.
If it's a gasket, you can do that yourself. If it's valves or rings, then they have to do that.
Yeah.
But you can at least tell them. They won't have to spend $10 worth of labor finding it for you.
Yeah.
That's right.
That's right. Then there's a fuel pump gauge in there. There's a hand starter. That's handy too. Just hook up the little thing to the starter, and you don't have to go around and get in the car and start it. While you're working on it, you know, one person can do it. You know, you can do it from right under the thing.
Yeah.
Just punch the button and it starts.
Yeah.
And if you want the car to start all together, then you just leave the ignition on. If you don't, then you turn the ignition off, and all it will do is turn the motor over, in case you want it to move it a little bit. Because when you're putting in the points or doing the timing, then the engine has to be at a certain place, so that if it's not right, then you just punch the button and it turns around once until you get it right.
Well, did you work on your timing?
I did all that while I was home this time.
While you're home. How much time to put on it?
Half hour.
You gave it like a promise. Huh?
Well,
no,
it's not much.
Who is that?
No. No, it's not. Now, what you were doing was just checking with your gauge.
Just checking with the gauge. You can, it doesn't take long at all. Nothing to it. Pulling the plugs out, if you have one of those little wrenches, takes you 5 minutes. Take them out and put them in.
Well, now, all your plugs, you can get the same kind. But, you know, suppose you want a hot plug, and you go in and say, this plug not quite hot enough on it.
Well, you tell the guy at the auto parts place,
yeah.
You know.
Well, he knows.
He got them. Several kinds. Well, the one I dealt with does. I don't know about around here, but he knows all about it. He's got a little table. He just looks up in the table. You tell him your make of your car in the year.
Yeah.
And there's a whole bunch of little things there that he can tell by which whatever you want.
Yeah.
So you can get them with resistors for radio. You know, if you get a plug without a resistor, then it interferes with radio in the car. You get the little tick-tick-tick-tick of the spark plug. So if you get the spark plug with the resistor in it, it costs about a dime more for a spark plug. Then it won't interfere with the radio.
That would work on the tractor, too?
I guess you could if you had a radio on the tractor.
Well, I have a radio with me on the tractor.
Yeah, well, you could do that then, yeah.
That'd be nice, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Then I wouldn't have to stop.
That's right. Spark plugs cost 89 cents, and you get them with the resistor, they cost a dollar.
Yeah.
That's right.
On
my car, yeah. My kind.
Yes,
most of them. Champions. Yeah. Most of the Champion brand, all of them are mostly about 89.
Where? At the parts place?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now these filling stations charge a whole bunch more. If you go to the parts place yourself, you can get them for what the filling station guy gets, and he adds water to them.
Sure.
So if you get them at a filling station, it costs you more.
Yeah.
But if you go to the parts place yourself, then you just get them cheaper.
Well, Nick, that you know, I remember nailing in there, cobbling or something. That you let me have the key and the ignition key, and I couldn't work it. Oh, I couldn't get it out.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the new safety devices they got. That you have to put it in reverse before you can take the key out.
Yeah.
In other words, you can't go off and leave your car without having it in reverse.
Yeah.
See, that keeps people from stealing it because they couldn't tow it away if it's in reverse.
And you can't.
And it also locks the steering wheel, so that the wheels can't be turned. So to tow the car away, you have to pick it up off all fours. That'd be the only way you could get it away.
Can't even pick it up, roll it on the back end.
Can't even roll it because it's in reverse. It's in gear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you can't take your ignition key out without locking it.
That's right. And they got those little buzzer things now. If your key's not out of the ignition, it gives a little buzz when you open the door. I don't like those. I disconnected mine. It bothers me.
That bothers me too.
Buzzing in my ears all the time. I don't like that. I just took it off.
And you've got plenty of room in the trunk.
Oh, loads of room. That thing's 5 feet wide by 4 feet. No, 5 feet long by 4 feet wide. And 2 feet deep. Good for 4 or 5 suitcases. Plus a spare.
Now, there's no place on a car anymore to put a trailer hitch. It'll just pull a little boat tail or something like that. It won't pull that much.
Well,
it's just not any place.
Depends on if you can get a hold of the chassis or not.
The chassis hadn't got anything to hitch onto either. It's just paper, just standard paper.
Well, some of those chassis bars are pretty big. They got to hold up the car.
Well, they crimp them, make them give them strength.
Yeah, well, that gives them right much strength, you know.
Yeah.
That L stuff. Or the I-beam stuff. That's tremendous strength.
Yeah.
More than just a little flat piece.
Yeah.
But see, some of them don't even leave holes. So you have to do your own. You have to cut holes in them and weld things.
Yeah.
One of the Chevrolet we had at home, you had to take the whole fender off and take the trunk apart just to put the thing on.
Yeah.
Murder.
Yeah.
I don't know why the manufacturers don't allow for that, because everybody's got them nowadays. You know, everybody's got something to pull.
Do you think
Azac
is going to make it to the
winter? Oh yeah, winter's almost over.
Almost Valentine's
Day. That's right. That's just next month.
Can't get that coastal planted.
Why not?
It won't plant 5 acres.
Really?
It won't plant less than 20.
Well, I haven't planted 20.
That's $20 an acre.
Ooh.
I don't know where I'd put 20 acres.
Yeah, man.
And how in the world?
You can't do it yourself?
Well, you and my friend.
I'm sure Cookie, you know. You're right.
He just has two plates made. He's not very physical.
Not less than 20. Now, I wonder why that is. Not profitable, huh?
Or just cut me out, I guess.
Well, when they over there plant somewhere else, he couldn't just drop by.
That's what he said. He could do that. Yeah. But my ground's just ready to plant right now.
Yeah.
Just ready.
And he's the only one that does it.
Only one that I imagine it all be about the same. They would want to go across the county for 5 acres.
Yeah, that's right. That's too bad. Why don't you put in clover?
do that for a while.
Yeah.
That'd
give you more leeway, though. You can wait a week, you know, give you time to wait.
I don't want leeway. I just want to go.
Well, couldn't we get out there and chop it in if we had enough hands?
You don't have hands, do you? Nick, this... I don't know that Mr. Lightwell ever did things like you do out here.
Yeah, he did at one time, long time ago, when he was my age. Not since. Maybe since. Well, see, he leased and ran for a couple of years there after he got out of college. 50,000-acre farm there in Tennessee. 50,000 acres.
Yeah.
He stayed in McPenny. Said I went broke on running, trying to run 50,000 acres.
Yes, I see how you work.
But he says I make more selling one horse than he ever did running 50,000 acres of farm.
Yeah.
He just.
But he's never done any work. He just...
Well, I guess he was an overseer or something.
Yeah.
He never did. I don't think he...
I don't think...
Well, he might have when he was a boy now.
I know. I don't think...
Because he lived on one. He was raised on one.
I don't think it was in his blood to pick up a hole. He could look at a hole all day and have him be tempted.
Well, that could be true. Now, that's the way of Mr. Tate. I know he did that. He did the same thing. All those agrarians there, after they got out of school, thought they'd put their ideas in practice, you know, so they all went out and not one of them could do it, so they all had to go back to teaching and writing and all. They couldn't do it on their own, you know. What they were going to do is see if they can make a living that way and just freelance on the side or something, you know. They couldn't do it, so they had to go back to their... Mr. Tate had a great big farm in the north part of Tennessee, up near Kentucky. Great big one. That same thing. He just had to get rid of it because he couldn't afford it. It's costing him money. So.
But I don't know. I don't know exactly what they've encountered, even seen.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't know. It doesn't come out in what they write, you know. You see, they never get close to the experience. It's always the abstraction.
Well, now Faulkner does.
He's not agrarian.
Well, they like to claim him, but maybe not. But, I don't know. Now, Mr. Tate's never done anything like that. He does all poetry and essays. Now, Mr. Lytle's novels come out. Have you ever read it, Velvet Horn?
A little of it. They're awfully concentrated.
Well, they're pretty difficult, but I think nothing in the world is difficult as Sound of Fury or something like that.
Yeah.
I can't get that at all.
Yes, but it's difficult for another reason. You just don't know who's talking.
Yeah, that's right. Well, a lot of his now. Boy, it takes the most simplest ones that I can get. That's the only ones I can grasp. The Faulkner's. Just a couple of those little simple ones. There's other ones I can't even come close to.
Yeah.
I can't see a thing.
Well, take that little experience that you had up at P. Ridge, Nick. You see, that's nice. That's nice. Anybody would like to get into that. And I think what a little Faulkner I've seen, he could relate that.
Yeah.
And put it all in.
Mm-hmm.
Great deal of it.
He does. In The Unvanquished there, I remember that story. We studied that in Mr. Lytle's class. That he got little incidents like that with horses.
Yeah.
Old Granny with her mule thing, and
what was that?
she would steal mules from the union and then sell them back to them, and then go and steal them again and sell them back again. She got a hold of some union stationery and forged a letter saying that Captain so and so said for you to give me 100 mules. So she'd go down to the nearest union camp and present the letter, and they'd give her the mules. And then she'd take the mules and go down to the next camp and sell them. Say, I got these nice, wonderful mules here. Wouldn't you like to buy them? They'd buy them. And she forges another letter and goes to another one, gets another 100, and goes just all over. She made a fortune that way.
Does she know how to handle a mule?
Oh, yeah. Boy, she hitched them up all herself. When the boys ran off, would go off on their own, and she'd be stuck. She'd hitch them up, the whole hitch, everything. Drive them in the middle of the night, anywhere, anytime, through the river, all by herself.
All by herself.
All by herself. And then when she was blackmailed by her overseer, she went down alone, hitched up all the mules, and went down alone to the hideout where the guy was, and faced him down, right there,
yeah.
All by herself, middle of the night, no help.
What was
that? 70-year-old lady.
What was that situation? I forgot.
The overseer was the one that was that would go with her sometimes to the union to get the mules. See, well, one time she sent him out. She was going somewhere else, and she sent him to go get some more to sell them. She was going to go get some. Meanwhile, he was going to go sell them. Well, he sold them and snuck off with the money, and she was after him. And so that's when she did. That's when she went down there. Well, a lot when John Sardis comes home, he's notorious around there. He's a Confederate, and they're all trying to catch him in the Union because he's in the cavalry, and he's doing damage to them, you know. So they're always patrolling around his house where Granny is and the boys to see if they can catch him, you know. So he did come home one time and was sitting on the front porch and growing a beard, and the Union people hadn't recognized him. So he was there, and they came riding up, and they asked him if he'd seen John Sardis, and he said, no. He said, I hadn't seen him lately. And then they started looking at him, you know, real funny. And he said, let me get you some coffee or something. He kind of walked out real slowly and got inside. Since he got inside the door, he yelled to his, whispered to his daughter to quick get the bridle and saddle up old Red. That was his horse. And she went out there, and the horse could sense that there was something wrong, and he was all jittery, and she couldn't bridle him. And she was an old horse lady herself. She couldn't put the bridle on. Well, meanwhile, the two boys were trying to get the saddle on, and they couldn't get the saddle on because the horse was jumpy. He said that didn't matter. He grabbed a rope and put it around his neck and jumped on the back of the horse and rode off right through the middle of the cavalry, the Union cavalry. And they were coming this way, and he was going that way. He just ran right on by him, bareback with a rope around his neck. And so he got away from them. They were about to catch him because they suspected him. So they burnt the house down for that.
Yeah.
And they had to move in with the servants down in the little house down in the valley. So he got lots of horse experiences in his thing. And he describes it, you know, he describes every little thing, you know. You can just see it.
But Mr. Lytle doesn't have it.
Well, I've never seen any horse ones from him.
Oh,
of course, now you've heard stories. He tells stories about him. You know, I've never seen his riding, but boy, he can tell stories about it.
He does?
Yeah. I can't recall any specific ones, but I know I remember hearing them.
That he has told about horses.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. All the ones he's owned and come in contact with and all.
Some that he's owned.
Mm-hmm. The horses, I can remember him something about he had a pair of buggy horses. They were real good or something. He's told stories about him before.
Oh, he had a path also.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, they lived on a ranch or a farm when he was growing up.
Yeah.
And they had horses around, hogs and cattle and everything.
He tells about those horses.
Mm-hmm.
But he just drove them to the buggy.
That's all I can remember right now, but I remember hearing stories about those horses. How he'd ride them bareback sometimes. The buggy horses, like Cookie, who was his. They're not for riding, they're for pulling the buggy, but he would ride them anyway.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. He wouldn't have riding horses.
No.
I don't know who had riding horses.
Well, just the...
It'd be uncommon.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Just the poor people who couldn't afford to have a buggy, you know, have a horse or a mule.
Yeah, it wouldn't be a riding horse.
No,
it'd
just be some
work horse.
Yeah.
They'd ride.
Yeah. That's right. That's right. Maybe the real rich people would have, you know, their jumpers or something.
Yeah.
That'd be all.
Yeah.
They weren't many.
But now you don't have to be rich to have jumpers.
No.
Just be interested. You
know? Yeah.
But, Nick, this trip over that you had to Pea Ridge, I forget how that goes. Jimmy caught you one Saturday morning?
He came over to my house. It was a week ago yesterday.
2 weeks ago yesterday.
No.
Just been home a week.
A week ago yesterday. A week ago today.
That's right.
That's right, because I got here Sunday.
Oh, that held you up.
That's right. I was fixing to come on down. See, it was about this time. It was a little later. It was about 12. Well, it was about 1, actually, because I just got back from the gun place. I just went down to get my guns, and then he came in. And,
let me check you.
You'd had your examination.
Just finished my exam. I finished.
It was about 1?
It was about 1 o'clock. I'd finished my exam at 12. And I'd gone down to the gun place at 12 and had gotten back by 1, and that's when he came by. About 1 o'clock. Apparently he'd been by before because he acted, like he was finally got a hold of me.
Yeah.
And,
he never would telephone or anything like that.
Oh, no, he would never telephone. Well, you know, his mother's maid there at the house. And that's how he knows where the place is. So he knows where my house is.
Okay.
I know his mother, too, and, you know.
You're right in the family.
Yeah.
That's right. Well, what do you know?
See, his father is the trainer for the football team. You know, the medic. And the whole family's there.
Nick, what is that house that you have that you don't pay anything for? Turned off the money?
Yeah, see, this old lady is, her husband died, and they had this big house. And they don't use it all, so they just chop it off in the back in half and rent out the rest. It's two stories. They rent the second floor and the first floor. And
she chops it in half.
She just cuts the house in half.
And you live in the other half?
I live in the top half, and somebody else lives in the bottom half. So there's two apartments there. Great big apartments.
$20
a month. No chores. No nothing.
She well to do?
She wasn't until a few months ago. When one of her rich relatives died and left her all her money, so she running wild now.
One thing runs yes. into another.
yet she complains about me using too much heat because it costs so much money. Yet she
yeah.
she only charged me $20 a month. And she complains about my heat being so much. I said, well, all right, I'll pay more rent or I'll pay the heat or something. She said, oh, no. I said, $20 is fine, but just don't use so much heat.
Yeah.
And so she comes in and turns the heaters off when I'm not there. I come back in the freezing cold room and I turn them back on. I go out for a minute, come back in, they're off again.
Yeah.
And
you ought to appreciate that.
But you don't. Well. I'd be glad to pay for more if I could just, I don't like a cold room. I like to have it warm. Especially when it's zero outside.
Yeah.
Your room gets to be zero after a while, you leave the heat off.
Yeah. Well, you can always jump up and down. Wear your sweater.
Yeah. I've even found the heat off when I woke up in the morning. And I was sure it was on when I went to bed.
How does she do?
Well, she, her part of the house is cold too. She has a great big grand piano in the front that I practice on. I come up there, my fingers are so cold when I play it, I can't do a thing. Cannot do a thing. It's so cold. She keeps she has company. She'll turn it on for about a half hour before the company comes. So it'll warm up a little bit, and you know, the company will come, be all right. And as soon as they leave, she turns it off. And the house gets cold again.
Who comes to see?
Oh, you know, her little friends around. Around the school there, the matrons and all. See, she's about 50, 55, 60 or so.
Age is it?
Yeah, and and the matrons from the dorms, the other ladies that are all single, you know. So she, you know,
well,
has them over for tea and all, you know.
They have to have heat.
I know. That's why she turns it on half hour before they come. And then it's all nice, you know. She has one of those air heaters that come up through the floor. And it rattles. Well, it rattles bad. The big vents are, you know, 2 feet round. They come up through the floor and there's a grate over top. And, you know, there's one of those holes in there in all the rooms in the floor, you know. And she turns it on. Something does with the heater. Down in there, the boiler or whatever it is, it rattles like just it really rattles. Sounds like garbage people sitting there with garbage can tops just rattling, and it echoes all over the house. Sometimes it gets real high pitched, like these little glass things you see in the, hanging in the doorways. You know, the little piece of glass hanging down. The wind blows against them, and they go tingle tingle. You know, sometimes it sounds like that. Rattles all over the house. Just. Nerve wracking.
You're going to be so spoiled up there and if you handle you can't be pleased.
Well, see, in the back half of the house, see, there's not that kind of heat. It's these little kind of you turn on, you know, the little electric ones.
Oh.
See, and you can, you know, you can turn them on high, medium, or low, whatever you want. It's not that air stuff. I don't have to deal with that noise in my room. So the, heating is separate for the downstairs and the other apartment the same way. So, see, you have your own unit there.
Are there nice big rooms?
I have two rooms the size of this room. Bigger. Right.
Takes a lot of heat.
Yeah. That's right.
It all goes up.
No, that's nothing. The ceilings are way high. They're higher than this.
They're 10 foot.
I know. They're higher than that. Way up. And all the heat goes up the top.
You wouldn't have
one. Oh, yes. There's great big ceilings. See, what they did was, it was an addition to the house. The regular house, when it was first built, was just that size. And then they added on that back half that she's now renting out. They added that on. Well, what they did was, instead of cutting off the ceiling where it should be, like the rest of the house, they just ran it on up as high as what the attic was. So, really, you got two stories there in one room, you know, to the ceiling.
Like a courthouse.
It is about
well,
like
electric
well, you turn the heat on, yeah, like we hear, and the heat just goes straight up, and you can be freezing cold down here. And you stand up or get up on
well,
top of the table.
It, you know, it's always
and it's hot.
It's always surprising how hot it is up there.
I know.
Up, see,
yeah.
I got up that rain came down the other day. I got to tack it up.
I know.
I got to sweat.
I know. That's the way it is. That's the trouble with these. See, and that's the trouble with that ceiling heat. You know, if they had the beams down from the top, doesn't work worth beans because all the heat stays up there.
Stays up there.
You got to have heat that comes up this way. At least it passed you on the way.
Well, that thing mixes up a little bit.
Yeah, well, anything that'll stir it a little, you know.
Of course, you don't want to just sit in with that thing.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
But, Jimmy's mother.
She's made there in the house. She cleans up my room, makes the bed up and everything. Vacuum, empties the trash can.
You ever talk to
her? Yeah. Well, you know, just past the time of day.
Yeah.
Well, she's so busy. That old lady is so frugal that she keeps on her. She says, now don't you sit there talking, say you get to work, you know. She won't let her stop for coffee or nothing. You know, if I kept her in my room talking to her, oh, she'd come after her. She'd say, you're spending too much time in that room. You ought to be done by now. So that's that.
Well, do you ever talk to your landlady?
Oh, she's not much. She's kind of dumb, really. She, she's a little teeny short, shrewish little lady. She's about, you know, 5 feet, 4 feet tall. And, you know, just a real witch. She's not. She's one of these little old ladies that goes in for all the little weirdo stuff. She buys all these little knickknacks, and that's all she can talk about. You know, little pretty colored things and little decorations, and that's all she does.
And she doesn't know anything about your horse.
Oh, she sees my saddle in the room. She wanted me to take it out because it was dirty enough to ruin my saddle. Brand new. Hardly ever been used. She wanted me to take it out. And I told her that it wasn't going to dirty it up. Boy, she knows the minute anything comes in, boy. If I bring in a new record or something. Oh, so you got a new record. You know, what's that? You know? Everything. Boy, she never missed a thing. Never missed a thing. Stuff that I bring, happen to bring in when she's not there. She gets to know. She finds out about it. Yeah, she watches out. I put up some bookshelves the other day. I came back and she was in Atlanta or something. I came and put up some bookshelves, you know. Next couple of days, I saw her up in her part of the house, you know. She said, I see about those bookshelves you got there. Pretty nice. Said, yeah. She knows everything that goes on.
She is more or something.
Well, maybe so, yeah.
So Jimmy got you.
So he got me. He had been watching, you know. He found out where I lived because of through his mother, you know. So he knew where to go. So see, there's two entrances to the house, the back entrance, the back steps, and the front way through her house. I never go that way, I go around the back. And he came running up the back steps. They're metal steps. Going up the side of the house into the doorway into my place. And I was inside. I just got back. And I was standing inside and he came. I hear the tup, 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 right up the steps, you know. And he only took about three steps, so I know he skipped about four in a row every time.
Oh,
you know?
He's active.
Oh, yeah.
But he don't ride.
Well, he rides, yeah, he likes to, but, you know, he's not very good. But, you know, he's active, yeah, he's big. He's 6'4", 200, big guy. Big, hefty. He works down on the Air Force, the AEDC, what's that stand for? I forget anyway, it's a government property down there. He's a manager, a foreman or something down there. And so I knew it must be something, because I couldn't see who it was, but I heard it clang, 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 you know, about three times. And there's 15 steps there. He only made about 4. Anyway, I could tell him something was in a hurry. So he was banging on the door. And I let him in. He said he's got a horse for me. And I told him he's always got a horse for me. Some, you know. And he said, oh no, this one's special. This one is special. And but he didn't want to talk about it. He said, come on, we got to go right now. And I said, well, wait a minute, I'm on the way to Florida. He said, yeah, but you can't miss this. This is going to be only this week only. And I said, well, what's the big deal? And he said, well, there's a horse up here that's got papers. And he really gleams when he says this, that's got papers. Oh, papers, it's got papers. I said, well, what kind of papers? What kind is it? Oh, it's a quarter horse. Got papers. And I said, well, there's a lot of horses that got papers. And he says, oh, but this one's really something because nobody can ride it. And I said, well, then I don't, I'm not interested if nobody can ride it. He said, oh, yeah, but you like this one. You could ride it. He said, he's looking for somebody that can ride it. And I said, well, if nobody can ride it, what makes you think I can ride it? Oh, you can ride it. You can ride it. So, I said, well, okay, sounds interesting. Should we just go on now in your car? Because his car was out back now, you know, he came over. Or, should I come pick you up? Well, I said, oh, you come pick me up. And,
what do you have?
And he's got an old Chevy. Old white, old model Chevy. And, he said, oh, you just come pick me up in a few minutes over at my house and bring that saddle. He said, that saddle of yours. Said, we need a saddle. I said, you got a bridle, too? I said, no, I don't have a bridle. He said, well, I can get one of those, maybe, I think. Okay, so I piled the saddle in the car and took off down there. Picked him up in a few minutes. And we went down. I said, where is this place? Do I have ever been there before? I know where it is. Oh, I said, I don't know if you've been there or not. It's down in Pea Ridge. And I said, yeah, well, I've been down to Pea Ridge before, to the Pea Ridge Horse Show. He said, oh, well, this in the village there. This is out from it. I said, okay, you show me how to get there. So.
Pea Ridge was 40 miles
off. 40 miles away after we gone. Yeah, we passed on through the... See, the Pea Ridge is back. See, the mountain the Swanee's on is actually a great big ridge, a mountain ridge.
Yeah.
And we're right at the point of it when it comes out to the stops and goes down. When you go to Nashville, you go down the mountain straight on out. Well, this way, this is the next ridge over. See, there's a whole series of ridges all the way the width of the state. And you go down the valley and up the next one and down the valley and up the next one, right on all the way. Get to the one in Chattanooga is the famous, you know, Lookout Mountain and all.
Yeah.
See, that's just a whole bunch of ridges all the way. Well, now Pea Ridge is the next one over from us. But now the whole thing is called Pea Ridge. But there's a little teeny weeny town, not bigger than half the size of Micanopy. Half the size of Evanston. Down there called Pea Ridge, you know, a gas station and two houses. Well, they have a horse show every month, Pea Ridge Horse Show, even though there's only 14 people that live there. Well, that's where I thought he was going to go, because there's an arena and all there, you know. But no, this was out from it, so we went to that place, and then that's about 20 miles away. We went another 20 out from there in the middle of nowhere, just down these little dirt roads, curling and winding around, and rights and lefts off through cow pastures, and just got out half the time. A couple of times had to get out open gates to go through.
Oh.
And so after we had gone 20 miles about out in the country there, we came up this farmhouse. And a little farmhouse there, and a barn out back, and some pastures and all. A few little cows around, and some pigs, and some horses. And we pulled up in the driveway and see the guy, you know, pull the curtains back, you know, look at him, you know. We wouldn't do anything when we just sat there. So Jimmy says, honk the horn. So I honk the horn. So then Jimmy got out. And the minute he stepped out, the guy opened the door. Ah, I said, you came. So he hadn't seen us when we were in the car. You know, as soon as Jimmy got out, he recognized me.
Oh, he didn't know your car.
Yeah, he didn't know. He'd never seen my car before. And he didn't know me. And he couldn't see, I guess. So as soon as Jimmy got out, he recognized him, came running out. And I forget what that guy's name was now. But anyway, Jimmy said, yeah, we came up to look at that horse of yours. And he said, yeah, well, the boy's out there catching them now. And we went around the back, and one of his boys out there was, you know, about Frank's age, was catching the horse. He had a rope around his neck, you know, and was leading him into the barn. And the horse was real jittery, you could see, because he pulled back on the rope, and the boy was having a hard time getting him in, you know. And so finally he got him in, you know, got him into the barn there and into a stall, which was a mistake. They put him into a stall, and it'd been all right in the stall if it had been the size of the horse. You know, like a stall like we got down there. Well, no, they put him in a stall big as this room. So, the guy told him, you know, to put the bridle on too, you know, and the boy couldn't get the bridle on. And he fumbled, and the guy got in there, the old man got in there. They both fiddled around with him. And he would shy back, he wouldn't let you touch his ears. And he wouldn't open his mouth, and he was just kicking up a fuss. But they finally got it on after, I don't know what they did, but they got it on, finally. And so I went up to the horse, you know, and you couldn't even, it was really hard because you had to watch. You couldn't even scratch your nose or he would jump upside the wall. So, the horse, you can tell it in their eyes, you know. Their eyes are real open. You can see the whites in their eyes, and they're just like this all the time.
Yeah.
Looking stiff and looking side to side. Nostrils are real, dilated. Anyway, that's what Jimmy looked like when he came running into me that day, earlier. He looked wild like that. Anyway, I went up there and, you know, and rubbed him and all, trying to get used to him. And he's still real jittery and stiff. You could feel his muscles were real hard.
He didn't offer to hurt you.
No, I was afraid that, you know, he would be a biter or a kicker. I didn't get behind, so I didn't know about that. But some of these, that's right. You have to watch. But some of them are in bad habits of biting, you know. I was afraid of that and pawing. Like paw with their front foot.
Oh yeah.
Oh, I've seen people get hurt bad that way from a front foot. Anyway, I was wary of that. But he didn't seem to be that mean. But he was just, I don't know if he was scared, just, or wary or what. But anyway, I got up there and sort of got used to him. But he was still real stiff. So I let him out into the open place there. And tried to put the saddle on. Well, let's see, I was on the left side of the horse. I was trying to swing it up from the back, you know. So, every time I go to throw the saddle up, he'd back off from underneath.
Yeah,
back right out from underneath it every time. He'd throw the saddle up, just about run his braid to come down on his back. He'd move out and the saddle would just fall to the ground every time. And so I used that old trick. I took my hat off, you know, and I rubbed it around on him so he got used to it. First he was scared, they're always scared of hats. And then I covered over his eye with it. Put it right over his left eye with my left hand. And throwing the saddle up, you see, he's nothing on my right hand. And once the saddle was on there, he didn't try to get it off or anything. Sometimes they'll buck, you know, and try to get the saddle off or something.
Yeah.
No, he was all right after that. He didn't do anything. So I cinched it up and strapped it all up and everything. And they looked sort of amazed that, you know, somebody could even get a saddle on. I thought that they had tried to ride him before and all, but apparently not. Anyway, I got a hold of the reins and started to get up, and the same thing. He would move his rear end around when I tried to get in. And so I did the same thing again. I put the hat over his eye and got up easy. He did. And
cross-handed.
I guess.
You had to.
Well, I had to. Yeah, that's right. Well, yeah. So after I got on, I was sort of scared. I didn't know what. You know, here this thing had really been wild. I thought he was going to throw me off right away or something. Or run or buck or something, but no, he just stood there. And I kind of sat there, kind of shaking. And the horse just stood there and kind of looked around. Didn't try to eat any grass or nothing, just kind of stood there. Everybody was standing there looking too. Nobody said a word. They kind of just sat there with their mouths open, you know. And I just sat there. Thought, well, he's not doing anything. So I kind of sat up and nudged him on, you know. And he started walking. He walked around. I walked around. There was a little field there, and I walked around the fence. Walked once around, got back to the people. And he hadn't done a thing, just walked just pretty as you please. And then I thought, well, I'll just see what he'll do a little bit faster. So I nudged him a little bit. He got to jogging along. He jogged around and around the fence again, got back to the people, you know. Didn't do a thing, just as pretty. Just, he hadn't even hobbled his head or been shaky or sweaty or nothing. And so then I thought, well, I guess I have to take the plunge. So I got him a canter. Some horses, you know, they'll be all right, you know, slow, but when you're going fast, they'll act up. So I got him a canter. We just kind of got cantered around the fence again. This time I went around twice, right around the fence, you know, all the way, and got back to the people. And I decided to see how good he could stop, so I pulled back pretty good, you know, screeched to a stop just perfect, and stood there. Everybody was, they sat there looking, scratching their heads, kind of wondering, you know, whispering back and forth, you know. And I said, I don't see any problem. What was all this about? Nobody could ride him, you know. And the guy, the old man, kind of looked embarrassed, you know. He kind of turned red and kind of looking down at the ground and scratching with his feet, you know, and making things in the dirt with his feet. And he says, well, tell you the truth, we couldn't even get on him. We couldn't even get a saddle on him. So we didn't know how he rode, because we couldn't see.
So had he had a little thing?
He had. He looked like he'd been riding decent. You know, Nothing spectacular, but you know, a good little ride.
Now, Jimmy, that's a long way. Now, Jimmy gets around in that country.
Oh, yeah, he knows all about those people. See, he goes all those shows, and he does a little trading by himself, too, you know.
Yeah.
And when you go to those shows, you meet everybody from 100-mile radius out in the country.
Yeah.
You know, you get to meet some guy, and he says, come on over, I got a horse to show you. You go, and, oh, yeah, he gets out lots like that.
Now, it seems like through him, you found this other place.
He showed me how I was in trouble with one of my shotguns.
Go ahead.
And I asked him, since he got around the countryside so much, where I could find if he knew anybody or who fixed guns, you know. I was kind of hesitant to ask him because, you know, some of these old jackleg people around, you know, you never know what they're going to do. He said, oh, yeah. I said, I know somebody. He said, the best around anywhere. Ray Judge. I said, oh.
I couldn't remember the name. Ray Judge.
Ray Judge. That's right. And so, so I said, well, let's just go down and have a look and see who that fella is. And meanwhile, before we got a chance to go down there, I had taken Dana and his car down to Mr. Seiler, the mechanic that I always go to. I had to tell you about him.
Mm-hmm.
He's the real good mechanic for real cheap, does everything. Anyway, I had him down there, and I asked him, I didn't ask him who Ray Judge was. I just said, who fixes guns around is real good. And he says, Ray Judge. I said, oh? I said, I heard about him. Tell me about him. He said, oh, he's just the greatest. He fixes everything. He even fixed President Roosevelt's gun one time. And I said, oh? He said, yes, sir. He says, boy, everybody comes to him. So I thought, well, maybe he is pretty good. So, next time I saw Jimmy, I said, well, let's just go down there. Show me where this place is. I asked him, tell me how to get there. And he says, well, I can't tell you how to get there. It's too complicated. I couldn't even draw you a map. I wouldn't even know. And I said, okay, well, just come with me and show me. Okay, so we went down the mountain.
Where'd you go?
Into the valley. Well, this was at 12 o'clock, just before the thing. Well, no, I picked it up then. We had gone the weekend before. He had taken me down there.
So, Saturday?
To Saturday, before the thing with the horse. And we had gone down there. And I had gone back by myself to pick it up the day before we went, the hour before we went to the horse. But anyway, he took me down.
But you went on Saturday?
Yeah, we went on a Saturday.
You can't get off in the week?
Well, I can, but he can. He works till, you know, 4 or 5 o'clock.
And go out there and Ray Judge. It'd take a while, wouldn't it?
It takes a long time, as I found out. I thought it was just...
He wouldn't get back in time to dine.
That's right. So we went down the mountain and got down one of these little old dirt roads that winded around and around and around, and little turns left and right, and through more cow pastures and things like that. And another gate.
And you found your way back.
Had to go through a gate. Yeah, well... I'll come to that later. That was, anyway, we got down there. Had to go through a gate again. We got out and opened the gate. And came up to a little old teeny house. Little tiny house. Looked like maybe it was a one-room house. It had a machine gun sitting out in front with the mailbox hanging from it. Ray Judge.
Machine gun?
Yeah. Ray Judge's Gunnery or something like that it had on it. And hanging from this machine gun again. Real ominous looking thing. Had a old strap of bullets in the thing, you know, and all. Big machine gun. And so, little old out in front of this teeny little old house. Well, around behind the house was great big warehouse thing. Barn or shed or something. One story thing. Great big. I mean, it must be big as all your sheds put together. Just tremendous. And went in there and just clean, polished, floors and everything. Just spick and span. I mean.
You mean they got floors in it? And
tile floors, just all polished and everything. And back behind his counter is rug, you know, and everything. All the wall thing behind his counter. Anyway.
Why are you
wall,
that?
I don't know. Boy, he must be prosperous. Anyway, all the walls, mine, all four, all the way around. A rifle, one rifle, the other, all the way around, side by side.
In that
must
big
have been,
place?
Must have been 5,000 guns. It's just unbelievable. Rifles and shotguns and just you name it, everything. And I showed him my guns, you know. He said, yeah, he could fix them. He took them, you know, just like he knew all, you know. He grabbed me, you know, he looked at it like this, opened it up. And said, oh, yeah, fix that in no time. I said, okay, well.
Gotta wait for it?
I asked him if I could wait for it, and he said, no. He said, he's got a whole line. He'd do mine in order, you know. He had a whole bunch to do. He had just passes. So, he had a whole bunch of people there, so we didn't wait.
Oh,
what? Yeah, there was a whole bunch of people there, and I looked at a few of the guns and left with Jimmy. I didn't get a chance to talk to anything. But then when we came back, when I came back to pick them up, that was 12 o'clock Saturday before I went down to the horse place. I got back at 1. That's when Jimmy came. But I'd gone down there at 11 or 12 or something. And this time I got down there, I found my way back. I took a wrong turn a couple of times. But I asked some people on the way, and they told me. So I got there, and then there was a couple people there. And after he waited on them, then he waited on me. And he says, oh, yeah, says, I got your guns. He says, he remembered who I was, didn't have to look it up, nothing, you know. And he said, I had so many to do this week, I couldn't do them, you know. It took me a week to get to your guns. But he remembered who I was and all. And so he pulled out my guns, you know, and he said, yeah, I got them all fixed. He said, this one here took a little something or other. He explained, I couldn't understand what it was. I didn't know anything about it. And he says, and this one here was this. And just nothing to it. This one took me 5 minutes to fix. I saw it right away. And this one took a little bit longer because it was something else. And he says, yeah, this one gave me lots of trouble. He said, I couldn't find out what was wrong with it. I looked and looked. He said, but I got it, finally. What he does is he tests them. He goes out and shoots it, and if it does wrong, he goes back and works on it. Goes out and shoots it again. He says, this one only took me 3 shots. Fixed it in 3 shots. But this other one, I had to fire 18 times to get to fix it. He says, I couldn't find out, couldn't get it fixed. He says, but I got it after 18 shots.
Shotgun?
Yeah, shotgun shell, yeah. And, and so he gave me the ticket. He says, well, that'll be $7 for the both of them. I said, only $7? I was expecting 27, you know, or something.
Yeah, who paid for the shells?
And that's another thing. I said, what about, you know, and he handed me the ticket. And on the ticket, it had $4 shells, $3 parts and labor. I was paying for the shells, but that was included. And so